Portland, Oregon. You think the kids will be all right? Howard asked. You want me to drive? His wife said. You know you can't worry and drive at the same time. This is the village of the happy, nice people, John, at least compared to where we live. They are in a crowd full of people playing with boomerangs, for God's sake. They'll be fine. This is the cleanest town I've ever been in. No trash, no beer bottles. It's like Disney World. Howard's Virgil chimed. He pressed the receive button. Yes? Hi, Dad. This is Tyrone, just calling to check in. We're fine here. Everybody is fine. No problems. And how are you? Nobody likes a smart-ass, Tyrone. He shook his head. But thanks for calling. Tyrone put on his airline pilot's voice. Roger that, parental unit 202. We'll be standing by here for your return. That's a discom. He's a good boy, Nadine said when Howard shut off the Virgil. Yeah, I know. Too bad he's turned into a teenager. You survived it. Once. I don't know if I can do it again. I have great faith in you, General Howard. You are, after all, a leader of men. One boy, how hard could it be? They both grinned. Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. A pair of armed guards, heavily armed guards, stepped from a cedar-planked and shingled kiosk and waved the cars to a stop at a big wooden wire gate. The men were in camouflage clothing, and one of them kept his assault rifle trained on the ground right next to the car as the other man approached. Aside from the rifles, they had sidearms, big sheath knives, and some kind of grenades strapped on. Colonel Ventura, the guard said. He saluted. Good to see you again, sir. Morrison's roommate of last night, Missy, was at the wheel. As they drove through the gate in a 10-foot-tall chain-link fence topped with coils of razor wire, Morrison said, Colonel Ventura, what is this place?
The rank is honorary, Ventura said. I did some work for the man who runs the place once. Let's call it a patriot compound.
There was a car in front of them with Ventura's operatives and one behind them, special vehicles rented at a place Morrison didn't think was going to run Hertz out of business. Morrison put two and two together. Idaho. Men with guns and paramilitary gear, razor wire. Some kind of militia group, he said.
Neo-Nazis or white supremacists? Let's just say if you were black, it would be a lot harder to call in the favor.
Jesus!
These people speak very highly of him, yes, but I doubt he spends much time here.
Morrison shook his head. Then again, it is unlikely in the extreme that anybody will sneak in here and kidnap you, Ventura said.
Certainly not anybody of the Oriental persuasion.
I thought you said the Chinese wouldn't send somebody who looked Chinese.
That's only if they want to sneak up on you. The Chinese don't like to delegate certain functions.
The narrow dirt road curved through another thick patch of woods, then into a cleared space maybe 3 or 4 acres big with several prefab metal and wooden buildings centered in the clearing, all painted a drab olive green. A big air conditioner rumbled in the background, spewing vapor into the hot afternoon. A pair of flags were flying from a tall wooden pole in front of the largest of the structures. There was Old Glory, and under it, a shining white flag, with what looked like a pair of crossed yellow lightning bolts over a line drawing of a hand.
Sons of pure man, Ventura said, watching Morrison as he looked at the flags. Empowered by God Almighty to smite the wicked, scourge the impure, and kick the asses of anybody else who would mongrelize the true race.
These people are friends of yours, Morrison said.
These people will help me keep the wily Chinese from grabbing you. We aren't family here, but allies are where you find them. Sometimes you have to overlook a few little cultural or philosophical differences.
Morrison sighed but didn't say anything else. Ventura had a point.
So now you put in a call to the used car buyer and invite him to drop around for a little chat. He won't like it, but he'll come, especially if he's figured out who you are, and that you might indeed have something worth selling.
And after that?
Well, Once they know you are where they can't get to you, then we can leave. Further communication can be relayed through here, and with any luck, we can keep them believing you are still here until the deal is done. And after the deal is done? If it is? One step at a time, Dr. Morrison. Oh, and by the way, after we step out of the car, assume that everything we say is being monitored. They can't hear us in here because we're protected by certain devices, but outside, you can book it that somebody will have a shotgun mic or even a laser reader on us at all times. Allies, you said? Trust no one, and no one can betray you. Just good tactics is all. Ah, there's the general. Come to welcome us. Jackson Bull Smith was no more a general than Ventura was a colonel, save to a bunch of mouth breathers who hut-hut-hutted around his compound in the Idaho woods. 30 years ago, Smith had been an army infantryman, done some fighting in the Middle East, but he'd never gotten past master sergeant. Still, he had seen legitimate action, he had a Purple Heart and a Bronze Star, and it was true you couldn't run an army without sergeants. And Smith knew the ropes well enough to organize a bunch of half-assed warrior wannabes into a fair imitation of soldierly discipline. At the very least, they were good robbers, because that was chiefly how they raised their operating funds. Smith's boys had stolen somewhere in the range of $6 to $7 million in the last year alone, Ventura guessed. As Smith stepped forward to shake his hand, Ventura nodded crisply.
General?
Please, Luther. It's Bull. Ventura suppressed a smile. Yeah, he thought it was Bull, too.
I don't want to break discipline in front of the men.
Understood, Smith said. 5 years ago, when Ventura had still been in the assassination business, Smith had contacted him, and they had struck a deal. A certain influential politician in the Idaho State House, if that wasn't an oxymoron, had been standing in the way of Smith's acquisition of this very compound, something to do with land use or butting up against state forestry property or some such. The politician, a state senator, knew what Bull and the boys were up to, and there was too much of that going on in Idaho already. The state was getting a real bad reputation. If he couldn't stop it legally, there were some shadier ways to get things done, and the senator knew how to do them. This, of course, played right into Bull's conspiracy fantasies. So, the politician died in what the coroner said was an accident, and Smith got the property he wanted. And Bull was not a man to forget somebody who'd done him a service.
General, I'd like to introduce Professor Morrison. The doctor here is doing some secret work for the Navy and Air Force, and naturally we don't trust them to keep him safe for our mission.
Smith offered his hand to Morrison.
There are traitors everywhere.
Sad but true, Ventura said.
I'll have my adjutant show your people where to bivouac, and you and the professor can join me for dinner.
Excellent, Ventura said. When Smith was a few yards ahead of them, Morrison said, How are you going to explain a Chinese agent coming here to see me?
What? A turncoat chink double agent. We're feeding false information to our gook enemies, Doctor. You know that.
The general understands how espionage works. He keeps his ears open. Ventura tapped his own ear and hoped that the man would remember what he'd said about being watched and listened to.
Ah, yes, I see you're right. A man in the general's position would know these things.
Of course. Hell of a soldier, Bull Smith, and a credit to the race. He turned slightly so that Morrison's head would block any camera that might see his face, and gave the man a quick wink. Saturday, June 11th, Washington, D.C. The voice was female and designed so that everything it said seemed like an urgent request to go to bed with it.
Alex, we have a priority one comm. Alex, we have a priority one comm. Alex.
All right. I heard you already. Computer answer page off, please.
Next to him, voice thick with sleep, Tony said,
I thought you were going to change that voice.
I haven't been able to figure out a way around Jay's program.
And you're supposed to be the head of Net Force.
To the computer, Michael said,
Answer comm, visual off.
Hey, boss!
Speak of the devil.
What, Jay?
Sorry to bother you at home this early, but you said I should let you know if I got something on this Chinese business.
All right. You want to download it here?
Probably not the best idea, boss. It needs telling.
Michael sighed. I'll be at the office in an hour.
Michaels turned to Tony.
Another crisis.
I remember them.
Why don't you come with me? I haven't hired anybody to replace you.
Let's hold off on that. I still need to sort all this out.
He smiled.
I thought we had done that.
No. We resolved the personal issue. I'm still working on the business stuff. You go ahead. I think I'm going to sleep in.
Be here when I get back?
Maybe.
They both grinned. Quantico, Virginia. Michaels leaned back.
Okay, you got me down here. Speak.
All right, background stuff. Generally speaking, the human brain operates over a fairly small bioelectrical frequency range, and while there is some overlap, these are usually divided into four parts. The mental state, beta, sometimes called beta waves, is from 13 to 30 hertz. This is the so-called normal level of awareness. At the top end, at around 30 hertz, you have states of agitation, anger, fear, stress, etc. But most conscious human thinking is done in this range. Below beta is the alpha state, from 8 to 13 hertz. And this is normally associated with a relaxed, mellow state of mind, kind of daydreamy, but with an increased ability to concentrate. This frequency is easily achieved by such things as meditation or self-hypnosis. For more than 40 years, there have been devices, biofeedback, or brainwave synthesizers that help produce alpha, and you can pick up one in any large electronic or new age store. Some people supposedly can do it just by rolling their eyes back in their sockets. Michaels nodded. He'd read about this stuff somewhere along the way. Jay continued. Beneath alpha is theta at 4 to 7 hertz, and this is generally a state of very deep concentration, such as advanced meditation or devoted prayer, and it includes intense waking memories and lucid dreaming. Under theta, we have delta waves from 0.5 to 7 hertz, and these frequencies were once thought to occur only in deep sleep. Certain people, however, such as Indian yogi adepts or Tibetan priests, have been able to produce delta states on demand, and while appearing to be asleep, fully participate in and recall conversations later when they are awake.
All right. So now I know about brain frequencies.
Jay nodded. Over the years, various agencies of various governments have tried broadcasting certain extremely low-frequency radio waves in an effort to alter human consciousness. In the 50s, the Russians had something called LIDA, a machine that supposedly rendered people susceptible to hypnosis. The North Koreans had variations of this during the Korean Wars, used on American POWs. They didn't work very well, but that was not for want of trying. For years back in the old Soviet Union, the Russians beamed microwaves at the American embassy in Moscow, centered on the ambassador's office. The CIA discovered this in 1962, and some effects on various ambassadors were speculated upon, including a leukemia-like illness and a couple of deaths from cancer, nothing proven. In 1976, ham radio operators around the world noticed a peculiar signal originating in the Soviet Union that came to be known as the Russian woodpecker from the staccato way it interfered with their radios. This signal was thought to come from big Tesla transmitters and were thought by the CIA to be designed to depress or irritate the recipient.
Tesla? Like the Tesla coil?
Jay grinned.
Let me tell you about Nikola Tesla. There are some who believe the Tunguska event, an explosion estimated in the 10 to 15 megaton range that blew down 500,000 acres of pine forest in Siberia in 1908, was either a test or a malfunction of one of Tesla's giant transmitters.
I thought it was a comet.
You probably think Oswald shot JFK too, boss. Merely a cover story, according to the conspiracy theorists. Some say it was a runaway black hole, others a speck of antimatter, but hey, my money is on Tesla. He was a certified genius, aside from being the guy who came up with and patented the idea of alternating current. He created fluorescent lights long before Edison's uncredited lab monkey made the less efficient incandescent bulb. Tesla patented all kinds of stuff. His work was the basis for the X-ray machine. He sued Marconi and won for swiping his work to create radio. Tesla came up with the ideas that would later become radar and tomography. Listen, in 1904, in Colorado Springs, he built a big power generator for his wireless power transmission experiments. Using what he called terrestrial stationary waves, he lit 200 light bulbs 25 miles away by pumping juice into the ground. No wires. He was way ahead of his time, so he certainly had the smarts and gear to knock down a few trees. It would have been the last in a long line of tests that some say included sinking the French ship Iena by electrical bolts generated miles away.
Apparently, Tesla didn't care much for the French, Alex said, smiling.
He didn't care much for anybody. Anyway, in 1906, J.P. Morgan financed Tesla, and he built a bigger generator than the one in Colorado. This was on Long Island, 18 stories tall, topped with a huge metal globe that weighed more than 55 tons. Eventually, he and Morgan had a falling out, and he ran out of money before he proved it could work. According to his theory, you could focus the power just right and turn it into what would essentially be a death ray with the power of a small nuke and send it anywhere on the planet by bouncing it off the ionosphere.
Fascinating, Jay. Are we getting to the point any time today?
There's a great story about Tesla going to a bridge with a hammer and a stopwatch, tapping the metal at precise intervals and damn near taking the bridge down with the galloping Gertie effect. I'm telling you, Tesla was head and shoulders above everybody else of his time.
Hello, Earth to Jay.
It's the same technology, boss. Pumping juice into the air without wires. The HARP people aren't doing anything that Tesla didn't think of 100 years ago.
All right, I'm impressed. He was a genius. Get to the point.
Well, according to my mole in the CIA, even after the demise of the evil empire, the Russians continued their experiments with ELF radiation using devices that Tesla would have recognized as his own. Ivan hasn't found the magic combination yet that we know of. Aside from HARP, which is the biggest, there are other atmospheric heaters like it all over the world, at least a dozen. And using the ionosphere to bounce off of, like playing pool, you can bank the shot. Any one of them could be driving the Chinese bonkers if they figured out the correct frequency to do it.
Sounds like science fiction to me.
No. That is the point, boss. It's old tech. Anybody with some wire and a lot of time on his hands can produce it. It's the frequency stuff they need, not the hardware. You don't need to be a whiz to get it to work. Tesla did the basics a century ago. Certainly a theory we ought to check out.
And how do you propose we check it out?
Hey, that's the fun part. We go into the wonderful world of VR and hunt it down on the net. I'll bet that somewhere, sometime, somebody has put something about this into the ether. And even if they hit it, I'll find it.
Michaels nodded. Mind control. A scary thought. What about Morrison? Are we checking him out?
Oh, yeah. I'm paying his files a visit this afternoon. I'll get anything anybody knows about Dr. Morrison, or my name's not Lightning J. Gridley.
Michaels just shook his head again. Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. It sure hadn't taken long, Morrison reflected. He'd made the call yesterday, and less than a day later, here was a limo carrying a Chinese agent pulling to a stop in the hot Idaho afternoon 10 feet away from him. He swallowed, his mouth dry. Standing a few feet away, Ventura had changed into a green T-shirt, blue jeans, and cowboy boots, and he made no effort to cover the pistol holstered just behind his right hip. Behind them, 20 feet back at parade rest, stood General Smith, flanked by a pair of his men holding assault rifles across their chest. The limo's door opened, and a small, balding, round-faced Chinese man wearing a white silk summer suit and soft gray leather Italian shoes alighted.
He smiled at Morrison and bowed slightly.
Dr. Morrison, I presume?
Morrison nodded and offered a nervous smile.
I am Qian Ho Wu, but my friends call me Chili.
The man could have been born and raised in Kansas. There was no trace of a Chinese accent.
Chili Wu?
Hardly a name to conjure up visions of water torture, was it? He seemed perfectly harmless.
Mr. Wu, this is my associate, Mr.
Ventura, isn't it? A pleasure to meet you, sir. Ventura gave him a broad smile.
Well, gentlemen, where can we talk?
Why don't we take you on a tour of the facility? Ventura said. A ride around to see the sights.
He nodded toward one of the special rental units. Ventura had told Morrison about this before. Inside the car, Smith couldn't eavesdrop on the conversation.
Of course, Wu said. Somewhere shady, my driver can park and wait.
Over there by the garage.
Wu leaned back into the car and reeled off a fast bit of Chinese. The driver responded in the same language.
Ventura said, Sure, there's a toilet in the garage.
Wu turned back. Ah, you speak Mandarin. Wouldn't it have been a better tactic to pretend ignorance, perhaps learn something useful? Ventura shrugged.
You weren't going to say anything useful anyway, were you, Mr. Wu?
Call me Chili, Luther. It's always nice to be working with professionals. Makes things so much cleaner, don't you think?
Ventura drove, and Wu and Morrison sat in the back seat of the full-size Dodge Intrepid. Ventura had taken his pistol from its holster and laid it on the seat. Wu didn't look it, but he was a dangerous man. Ventura had been around enough of them to know one when he saw one.
So what exactly are we looking at buying, Dr. Morrison? Would it be too forward if I call you Patrick?
A very useful vehicle design.
That's it, just the design. No wheels, motor, no chassis.
Any electrical engineering student could build you the hardware, Mr. Wu. Only I can show you how to make it work.
I see. And how much are you asking for this design?
$400 million.
Wu chuckled.
A hell of a used car.
Satisfaction guaranteed or your money back.
Uh-huh. And what proof do we have that you can deliver?
Morrison smiled. Next time you're in the old country, take a trip to visit the villages of Daru and Longhua. And ask the survivors how things have been lately.
Wu nodded.
Very well.
Anybody with good intel connections, such as Luther has, could have gotten those two names.
How do we know you aren't running a scam?
What would it take to convince you?
Well, you could give us the technology, allow us to test it, and then let us pay you.
Morrison laughed, and after a moment Wu joined him.
Just a thought, Wu said.
Try a different thought.
Wu rubbed at his chin and pretended to do that.
All right. Let's take it for a little test spin. Kick a few tires, drive around the block. This time, we pick the destination. If it works there, as it did in Daru and Longhua, then we would be very interested in your vehicle.
At my price?
I think we've strained the car metaphor as far as we can. I need to get back to my superiors with your offer. We will come up with coordinates for a test. If it works, then we'll discuss terms.
Vermilion River, Lafayette, Louisiana.
Jay had to smile at the imagery the boss enjoyed. He had a thing for the swamps. A couple of times Jay had gone with Michael's default scenarios, and they had been boats on bayous. As he motored along the narrow river, Jay decided to stay with this sequence. It was easier to use this than to create a new ersatz, so he cruised right on up to the Dewdrop Inn. That name was worth another smile. Carrying a small satchel, Jay approached the front door. There was a raggy-bearded yeehaw kind of guy in nothing but overalls leaning against the door.
Ain't open, the man said.
I know.
I just wanted to let you know that somebody is around back trying to break in. It took a second or three for it to register, probably because Yeehaw had some kind of dinosaur-like sub-brain. Yeehaw frowned and lumbered away, heading for the back door. Jay waited until he was out of sight, then slipped the lock on the front door with a thin piece of steel, stepped inside, and relocked the door behind him. The door guard, in reality a firewall program for the HARP computer system to stop outside access, was strong, but not very bright. The guard would amble around back, not see anybody trying to break in, then return to his post on the front. He'd remember that Jay had approached, if anybody asked, but since Jay wouldn't be visible, the guard wouldn't worry about him. He'd never think to look inside. That would be beyond his capabilities. That was the problem with software. Hardware, too. People didn't upgrade for all kinds of different reasons, and it always cost them something. Jay found the lockbox under the bar that the boss's report had mentioned. He removed a pair of latex gloves from his satchel, slipped them on, and bent to examine the box. He saw the scratches showing the padlock had been tampered with. Humming to himself, Jay removed a small aerosol container from the satchel, aimed it at the lock, then sprayed it with a fine mist of dry powder. He blew the excess dust off, then used a second aerosol can on the lock, this one a kind of liquid glue. Several fingerprints appeared as the chemical reaction from the two sprays took place. Jay pulled a clear strip of transfer tape from a roll in his handy satchel, carefully pressed it against the lock, peeled it off, and stuck it onto a white plastic card. Just for fun, he took his pick gun and a torsion tool and opened the padlock. Took all of about 6 seconds, a piece of cake. The lockbox had stacks of papers, money, some coins, all virtual representations of various kinds of electronic files. Jay picked up a couple of papers and scanned them, but he wasn't as interested in what they had to say as he was in who had broken in before him. He closed the box, relocked the padlock, and headed for the back door. He would take the prints back to the office and check them. Of course, what he really would be doing was backtracking E-codes and running down servers and all, looking to see who had left traces of their visit. If the thief had been stupid enough to do it barehanded, Jay would have him. Probably he hadn't been that stupid, but you never knew. Some were smart but lazy. Some liked the adrenaline rush of doing something illegal. Jay ran into guys like that all the time. Hackers who thought they were faster or smarter or better and who wanted to test themselves. He could understand that. If he hadn't gotten into NetForce, he'd probably be doing it himself. But now, it was his job to nail them. He didn't think whoever had broken into HARP's computer was one of the best, or they wouldn't have left scratches on the lock. This would be a walk in the park. Now he had to go and find out about Dr. Morrison. If anything, that ought to be even easier. Portland, Oregon. Tyrone and Nadine had spent the morning watching contestants in the various events. Tyrone looked at the sunny meadow, then at Nadine. She wasn't a look-a-me like Bella, but in this light here in this green field, she was a lot more attractive in ways that Bella was not. She was a person, somebody who liked being with him. Somebody who he liked being with for reasons that went past a pretty face. What are you grinning at, fool? Your chances of beating me tomorrow? Tyrone shook his head. Nothing. Well, come on, let me give you another lesson in how to throw. They both grinned. At that moment, Tyrone didn't see how life could get much better than this. Well, maybe after he won the championship it could. Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. Have you ever fired a handgun, Dr. Morrison? They were on one of several shooting ranges at the militia compound. Morrison shook his head. No, rifles and shotguns when I was a boy, not pistols. Ventura said, the principle is the same. You use a sighting device to line the weapon up on the target, press the trigger, the gun goes bang. The main differences are that a shorter barrel is harder to aim well, and most handguns have considerably less punch than a rifle or a shotgun. You trade stopping power for portability and being able to conceal the weapon. Ventura pointed to the tabletop where several pistols lay. That's a Glock 40 semi-auto, the black plastic one. Next to it, that's a Taurus 357 revolver.
These two have the most oomph. I have to apologize, Doctor. This isn't how you'd learn to shoot if I had time to teach you properly, but we don't have time. Morrison put on the headphones Ventura handed him. The hearing protectors are electronic, Ventura said. You'll be able to hear fine until the gun goes off, but they'll cut out the noise. Stand like this, arms out in an isosceles triangle. Grip is important. Hold it tight. If you need to shoot, you probably won't have time for a clean sight picture. Your attacker will be right in your face. So what you'll do instead is point it like you would your finger and index the whole gun. Here. He handed Morrison the black plastic pistol. Try it, that target right in front of us. Shoot it twice. It will kick some. The cardboard human torso and head was maybe a dozen feet away. Morrison took a deep breath, pointed the Glock at the target, and pulled the trigger. The damned gun almost jumped out of his hands. He lowered the weapon and looked. There were no holes in the target. How could he have missed? It was right in front of him. First round was off to the right, second was way high and right. Try the Taurus. 5 minutes later, Morrison felt a sense of profound embarrassment. He had fired 10 shots from 5 guns. Only 2 of the bullets had hit the cardboard. Don't feel bad, Ventura said. Trained cops miss at this range. Try this one, Smith & Wesson Model 317, an airlight. Morrison took another deep breath, indexed the little gun, pulled the trigger, 1-2. The revolver jumped a little, but not much, and when he looked at the target, there were 2 small holes in the center, no more than 1 or 2 apart. Hey. Again. This time, keep pulling the trigger until the gun stops shooting. Morrison obeyed. This time he was able to see the holes as they appeared in the cardboard. All of them were clustered in the center. Very good. This is your weapon, Ventura said. It doesn't have any real stopping power, but a solid hit from a small caliber round is a lot better than a miss from a hand cannon. If it's one guy, point and shoot until he falls down or goes away. If it's more than one, give them 2 rounds each, then repeat. We'll practice that. Double taps. But they didn't get to double tap practice. The sound of Morrison's cell phone ringing was clearly audible through the electronic sound suppressors. That would be the Chinese calling. Morrison removed the earphones and thumbed the receive button on the phone. Hello, he said. Hey, Pat, what say we take that car of yours for a test drive? I know just the place. Washington, D.C. The mall was hot and muggy, but Tony didn't really care. It was good to be outside moving, good to be back in the U.S., and especially good to be walking next to Alex. He wanted her to come back to her job, and the truth was, she wanted to. But that had been a big part of the problem, working for Alex, and she didn't see how it was going to improve. He had skipped sending her into a danger zone when she'd come up in the rotation. And while she wanted him to be concerned for her as a man was for his woman, she did not want the same concern from a boss to an employee. There was the possibility of a transfer. Alex had never put her resignation into the system. She was officially on personal leave. NetForce was more or less freestanding as an operation, but it was still technically part of the FBI. There were people on the other side of the fence at Quantico who would be pleased to have her working in their offices. Alex probably wouldn't like it very much if she jumped into the Bureau mainline. Then again, it wasn't really his choice, was it? She had to do something to earn her living. Her phone's attention beck came on. She looked at the screen, but the caller's ID was blocked. Hello?
Hello, Tony. How are you?
Some bored god must be reading her mind and taking an interest in her life. It was Melissa Allison herself, director of the FBI.
Fine. And you?
Surviving. Listen, I understand you are interested in transferring from NetForce into Mainline. Is that correct? Indeed, she had been considering it only seconds before, but she hadn't made the decision yet. Tony glanced at Alex, who was busy watching a young couple with 2 small children.
Yes, ma'am. I have been considering it.
I have an opening in my schedule tomorrow around 1. Come and see me and we'll discuss it.
Yes, ma'am.
With that, the director was gone. Tony hooked the phone back into the belt of her jeans. Alex turned away from the children and looked at her, lifting his eyebrows in question. Who was that?
Maybe it was selfish of her, but Tony didn't want to kill the rest of the afternoon. If she told Alex it was the director, she'd have to explain the rest. He'd want to talk about it, and she just wasn't up to that. She'd only been back with Alex for a couple of days. It didn't feel secure as once it had. And if he knew she was thinking about going over to the Phoebe shop, she was sure he would be upset. She slipped her hand around his arm. Nothing important. As they passed the young parents and children, Alex grinned at the little girl. Ever think about having children? Tony stared at him. Children? With Alex? Of course she had thought about it, dreamed about it even. But before she could gather herself enough to say anything, he shrugged. Just an idle thought. Sunday, June 12th, Kokona, Alaska. No Chinese assassins materialized to intercept them as they drove from the old pipeline airstrip where they left the hired helicopter toward Gakona. Ventura said it wasn't likely, and he had 10 of his people checking possible ambush sites along the route, plus cars in front and behind theirs. You think they'll be here?
Oh, they're here. I'm not sure they'll try for you yet. They may be waiting for the test to be certain you can do as you say before they get really serious.
You think once we're inside the facility, we'll be safe?
No, but I've worked out a few escape routes from the facility.
The trip was uneventful, however, and within an hour they were inside the auxiliary trailer warming up the system. About ready, Morrison said. He picked up a dog-eared phonebook-sized tome of locations by latitude and longitude and thumbed through it until he found the ones he wanted. There it was, 45 degrees, 28 minutes, 24 seconds north, 122 degrees, 38 minutes, 39 seconds west. Not the center of the city, but it would take in all of downtown on both sides of the river. It'll have to run for a couple of hours to get the optimal effect. Not as long as it did in China, since the target is closer and we lose less energy for the beam.
Fine.
He looked at the control, flipped the cover up, pushed the button, and it was done. He could go eat or take a nap while it worked. I feel kind of, I don't know, awkward about this.
Why?
Well, the target being in the United States and all.
A pang of nationalism?
Maybe a little. I somehow didn't think it was going to go like this.
That's always the way. No battle plan survives first contact with the enemy. You know why it's a deal breaker if you don't do this, don't you?
No.
Why? Because if this works, you haven't just killed some faceless people about a million miles away. You're a multiple murderer in your own country. And the city you were given as a target? It is in a state with the death penalty. Did you know that?
Morrison felt the taste of bile threaten to rise in his throat. No, I didn't think about that.
Ventura shrugged. You can only ride the needle once. That's how they do it there, by lethal injection. What the Chinese want is more assurance you won't change your mind and go running to the authorities once the deal is done. Once this deal is complete, they don't have to find you and kill you. All they have to do is tell the feds who you are, sit back, and let them do the work. The Chinese wouldn't want a trial, of course, having all this come out, but neither do you. And once you get arrested, well, then they know exactly where to find you. It's very difficult to stop an assassin who is willing to die to get the job done.
Morrison felt the ugly truth chilling him to his core.
I see. Not quite yet, you don't. Before you push that button, let me lay out a few more things you have to know. Once you get your money, Patrick Morrison has to disappear. If you had visions of yourself awarding grants to starving scientists or some such, you might as well erase those ideas now. You will have to sever all links to your past, and unless your wife is willing to go along for the ride, that will include giving up contact with her, too. You'll be a new man in a new country. You won't even be able to read the same magazines you used to read or practice any of your hobbies because you can bank on it. Somebody will try to track you from something as innocuous as those. Patrick Morrison will have to die figuratively, or he will surely die literally.
Morrison stared at him. For a moment, it took his breath away.
That's how it will have to be if you want to survive. I can help you do it, tell you the steps you have to take, but once you're set, I can't have any more contact with you either. They might want to convince me to tell them. And better for you if I don't know your new name and face. So, the question you have to ask yourself is, does $400 million justify you becoming an entirely new man? With that kind of money, you can live like a king, as long as you don't stick your head up too high and get noticed.
Morrison stared at the button. It's already too late to turn back, isn't it? Ventura gave him a thin smile.
Truth? Yes.
Morrison took a deep breath. Fuck it, then. He reached out and pushed the button.
Washington, D.C. At home, Jay came out of VR and removed his headset and gloves. It had been a milk run, a visit to a library, and no matter how skilled you were in creating scenario, sooner or later reading a pile of material came down to reading a pile of material.
He had all he could find on Dr. Patrick Morrison, and from what he'd gleaned so far, the only blot on an otherwise white bread career was at the job he'd had before going to work for HARP. He'd been doing some kind of behavioral modification experiments on chimps, working with extremely low-frequency radiation, a postdoc research project at Johns Hopkins, and it had apparently petered out. He failed to get the results for which he had been looking, his grant had not been renewed, and he'd been out of a job. A small red flag went up in Jay's mind, but when he thought about it, it wasn't that big a deal. Yeah, the guy was into ELF stuff, but that's what a lot of HARP was about. The phone played the opening strains of Bach's Toccata and Fugue in D minor. His phone played that particular tune only if the caller was ID'd as coming from NetForce.
Better get to the office, Jay, Michael said. There's been another case of collective madness.
In China?
No. Closer than that.
Portland, Oregon. John Howard watched as his son came up to make his throw. The boy rubbed his fingers back and forth and allowed some glittery dust to fall to check wind direction. He held a stopwatch in one hand and his boomerang in the other. The judges waved Tyrone into the circle. Howard felt more tense than he thought he would. It was a big deal to Tyrone, of course, but it was just a game, after all. No reason to be digging his fingernails into his palms. Off to one side and behind Tyrone, little Nadine stood, waiting for her turn to compete. The judge nearest the circle held up his hand in a halt sign, then called another judge over for some kind of consultation.
Come on, come on, Howard said. Let the boy throw before his arm gets cold.
Next to him, his wife said, Asshole. He looked at her. You talking to me?
I was referring to the judge, but if the shoe fits...
That pissed him off. He glared at her. She glared right back. Tyrone walked to where the judges were. Howard couldn't hear what his boy had to say, but apparently the judges didn't like it. The head judge reached out and slapped Tyrone upside the head.
Fuck! Howard yelled. You see that? He hit our son!
Even as he spoke, Howard ran toward the judges. The second judge hauled off and punched the head judge square in the mouth, knocking the man down. Certainly this was justice, but that irritated Howard even more.
Leave him, that bastard is mine!
Tyrone stepped in and delivered a solid kick to the fallen judge's ribs. Even as he drew near to the trio, Howard was aware of noises coming up the hill. Horns honked, metal crashed into metal. He slid to a stop as the second judge spun to face him.
Get off the circle! The man screamed. You can't be here!
Oh yeah? Hey pal, I'm already here. What are you gonna do about it?
The second judge threw a haymaker at Howard, who ducked it, came up, launched a fast left hook to the face. The guy sailed backward into the ground.
Get off that, asshole!
The judge Tyrone was kicking got to his feet and lurched at the boy, but both Nadines arrived. His wife kneed the guy in the crotch, as little Nadine latched onto his arm and sank her teeth into his shoulder. Irritated, Howard moved toward them. This was his business to take care of. He didn't need the goddamned women getting in the goddamned way. A car came across the field, lights on and horn honking, a big powder blue Cadillac. It plowed into a group of five men who stood there giving the driver the finger. The men flew like dolls in all directions as the driver gunned the engine.
Eat shit and die!
The driver screamed. Then he started to laugh. The driver spun a donut in the grass, still cackling madly.
Something wrong here, Howard thought. He shook his head, then looked at the man he had just decked.
What was he doing? He looked down the hill and saw a dozen people fighting. One of them was a policeman. The cop pulled his gun and a quick succession of shots, pop, 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 echoed up the hill. Gunshot victims fell and added more screams to the din. Dazed, Howard looked up the hill. There were people there, too, but they weren't fighting. They were watching, staring in surprise. Howard's thoughts were fogged with rage, but something was trying to make its way through. This was a bad place. Down the hill it was worse, but up the hill it was better. Therefore, come on, he yelled to his family. We have to get up the hill. Fuck off, Tyrone yelled. Little Nadine released her hold on the judge, who was screaming in pain. She stared at Howard. What is going on? She said, her voice high and frightened. I don't know. Gas, maybe. We've got to get out of here. Help me. His wife kneed the judge in the nuts again. The man gurgled in agony. Howard grabbed her, pulled her off. Leave me alone. He hit my son. Howard jerked her backward. Tyrone! The boy turned, and the mask of primal rage on his face slipped a little. He raised his eyebrows. Dad! Up the hill, son, up the hill. Go, go! Tyrone nodded. Little Nadine grabbed his hand, and they started running. Howard had to pin Nadine's arms to her side, and he half-carried, half-dragged her away from the meadow. Finally, when they were 200 meters away, Nadine came back. John? What? I don't know, hon. But whatever it is, the further away we get, the better. Come on. They caught up to the children, and the four of them kept moving. Howard looked back as they ran. The Cadillac was laying on its side, and a mob had the driver out and on the ground, kicking him. He was a dead man. More gunshots echoed from farther below. Horns honked. Cars crashed. People screamed in voices full of incoherent fury. This beautiful park, what the locals like to call God's country, had gone mad. Howard reached for his Virgil. Who to call? The local cops were down there shooting people. Quantico, Virginia. Tony had come with him this time, and he was glad to have her here. Along with Tony was Jay Gridley. It was 7 p.m. on a Sunday, but they wouldn't be going home tonight. All right. Here is what we have so far, Michael said. It's still kind of sketchy. Late this afternoon, people inside what appears to be a rough circle 10 miles across and centered in the Westmoreland area of Portland, Oregon, went nuts. So far, there are 67 confirmed deaths, murders, self-defense, traffic, and freak accidents. There have been hundreds of people hurt bad enough to require hospitalization, and thousands more lesser injuries. Whatever caused it seems to have stopped, but the city is in chaos. The numbers of dead and injured keep climbing. Lord, Lord, how is General Howard? Jay asked. Howard had been the one who'd called it in. He'd gotten hold of the National Guard, then Michaels. He and his family are fine. They were apparently right at the outmost edge of the phenomenon's effect. A couple hundred meters closer in, and they'd have been in a lot more trouble. What have you got for me? If we assume this is coming from some very powerful broadcast station, then it's a matter of figuring out which one and who is running it. I played a hunch and put in a call to HARP, talked to a guard there. They are supposedly on hiatus, except for some calibration tests. That's what Morrison told me, Michael said. Well, Morrison is up there right now running one of these tests. And guess what? According to the guard's logs, he was running other calibrations on the same days those two villages in China went bonkers. Jesus. Yeah. Awful coincidental, ain't it? Tony, what do you think? I think maybe you ought to pick up this Dr. Morrison for a serious chat. Michaels nodded. I'll get a federal warrant and some marshals on the way. And while he was at it, he would give General Howard a call. After his personal experience, John might like to go along to have a few words with Morrison himself. In his position, Michaels knew he would. Gakona, Alaska. Ventura looked at his watch. It had been 6 hours since the real test had ended, but Morrison felt he had to play out the fiction of conducting his calibrations. In the end, Ventura knew that wouldn't matter, but Morrison felt the need. It was late, and Ventura, while not tired, was feeling somewhat edgy. Morrison was lying on the ugly brown fake leather couch at the end of the room, fast asleep. Ventura's calm vibrated against his hip. He touched the mouthpiece of the small wireless headset he wore hooked over his left ear.
Yes?
We have company. 2 cars, 4 men. They just passed Rim 1, tan Fords unmarked, what looks like government fleet plates. 3 men, 1 woman. Cunningham will get a better view with his digital scope when they go under the rail overpass. Ventura felt the goose flesh warning him of danger. If they were traveling the speed limit, they'd be reaching the overpass right about now. The phone vibrated.
Go.
Stiles said, from the front, 3 men, 1 woman, clean cut, mid-30s, matching dark windbreakers, blue maybe. Hold on, they're going past. Angle is bad here, I can't see their backs. Some kind of logo on the jackets. Last letters look like H-A-L. That's it.
Sounded like feds. H-A-L, last few letters of Marshall, as in reflective yellow letters on the back of a windbreaker. U.S. Marshall. Of course, if it was Wu coming to collect Dr. Morrison, this was the kind of thing he'd do. Disguising your kidnap team as cops or firemen or federal agents was clever. Who stops a fireman on the way to a fire? Unless, of course, they were real feds.
Got it. Discom.
Ventura called the 2 men watching the gate into the compound.
Let them pass, but see if you can get an ear on the guard at the gate if he lets them in.
Ventura broke the connection, walked to where Morrison lay sleeping.
Wake up, Dr. Morrison. Huh?
What?
My people report that there are 2 cars that look like they belong to the feds on their way here.
The phone vibrated again.
Go. Our shotgun mic picked up the exchange. Guys in the car say they are U.S. Marshals come to serve a federal arrest warrant. They asked where they could find Morrison. The guard told them and let them pass.
Got it.
Pull back to Rendezvous A. Call the other teams and tell them.
Ventura looked at Morrison. These guys convinced the gate guard they were U.S. Marshals. They've come to collect you.
Morrison shook his head. No way. They can't know I had anything to do with this. I covered myself.
Convince me.
Nobody actually took anything from the computer files. It only looks like they did. I got into the HARP system from a Mac store in San Francisco, using a floor demo model connected to the net. Even if somebody could backtrack it through the store's server, it ends there. And I used BoxAx to light the system. No hands, so no prints, no DNA. Nobody could possibly connect it to me.
All right. So if they aren't real feds, then they must be from the Chinese.
What are we going to do?
Leave. That little scooter is quiet, and in the dark they won't see us. A pickup car is waiting at a spot where nobody will notice it. Come on.
As he followed Ventura from the trailer, terror gripped Morrison. He needed to visit a bathroom, bad, and it was hard for him to breathe without wanting to pant. None of this had been in his plan, none of it. It didn't feel real. It felt like some kind of demented dream. Since there was no way the FBI or NetForce could know who he was, it had to be the bastard Chinese coming for him. And he had no doubt that if they caught him and even threatened to pull out his fingernails or crush his testicles, he'd tell them anything they wanted to know. And it wouldn't take long in the telling, either. The technique for disrupting the human brain into a temporary psychosis wasn't something easy to figure out, but it was easy enough to do. The broadcast frequencies had to be varied precisely. It took a computer to run the sequence, and the odds of happening on the proper code by accident were astronomically high. Morrison didn't deny that he had been lucky, and the truth was, driving people mad had never been his goal. Controlling their actions in a more deliberate manner had been, and he had failed in that. It was as if he had gone searching for diamonds, but had found opals instead, and...
Hey, where was Ventura going?
The scooter is over there, Morrison said. We're heading the wrong way.
No, we're not. We need to do something first.
Ventura had his pistol out, and they were moving toward the power building. The headlights of the approaching car shined through the trees.
They're almost here,
Ventura said.
You stay put. I'm going to have a short conversation with the power supply.
Ventura vanished inside the building. Morrison tried to calm down. His heart was racing so hard he could feel it pulse all over his body. Come on. Come on. Come on. The lights died. Ventura appeared from nowhere.
Come on. Time to leave.
He smiled. It was the most joyful expression Morrison had seen Ventura make. It was like a glass of cold water in the face.
You're enjoying this.
Of course. It's what I do, Doctor. Stay with me.
They ran. Ventura felt the adrenaline surge in him. This was the zen of life and death, and the part of him he kept hidden from the world. It was the stretch, the reach, the ultimate test, the perfect way to be totally in the moment. The past was dead, the future not yet born. There was only the now. Fail and you die. Succeed and you live. Ah, but to make it a real test, you had to level the playing field. He had the advantage. They had to capture Morrison alive, so they were hobbled. Therefore, he would give them a chance. So he delayed, killed the power which gave him darkness, but which also gave them a warning. I know you are here. Let's play. Come and find me. The two cars pulled to a halt, and Ventura heard doors slamming and voices raised.
Trust me, Ventura said. I know exactly what I am doing.
His phone vibrated.
What?
Another player approaching. Black man in a Dodge van, looks like a rental car, just passed me.
Ventura frowned.
Who was this?
Just a coincidence? Some fisherman running late for his hotel reservation or part of the backup plan? And a black man? That would be unusual. The Chinese didn't much like black people. Of course, they didn't much like anybody who wasn't Chinese. A lot of people in the West didn't realize that Eastern societies were the most racist on Earth. They not only despised and looked down on Westerners, they despised and looked down on each other.
Keep me advised, Ventura said. He tapped the headset off. Let's go for a little ride, shall we, Doctor?
Monday, June 13th. Gakona, Alaska. Howard was still peeved. The marshals were supposed to meet him at the airport, but his plane had been delayed an hour coming out of SeaTac, and they hadn't waited for him. He couldn't really bitch about it officially. NetForce didn't have any jurisdiction in the matter per se, even though they had gotten the warrants and the marshals would be delivering Morrison to HQ in Quantico. And as the commander of NetForce's military arm, he shouldn't be out in the field on this kind of errand anyhow, no job for a general. But it pissed him off being left behind just the same. Howard rented a car and burned the speed limits trying to catch up. The narrow road he was on ran parallel to a tall chain-link fence topped with razor wire and hung with government warning signs. HARP would be on the other side of the fence, somewhere past the thick forest of evergreens. From the last road sign he'd seen, he judged that he was almost to the compound's gate. He saw a bright light over the treetops. But suddenly fierce darkness claimed the night. And that was odd, because this close, he expected some kind of glow from the HARP compound bleeding into the sky. They must keep some lights on, right? Almost immediately after the light faded, he heard three shots, a staccato pap, 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 followed by two more that resonated with a louder, sharper crack, crack. He reached down to where the new revolver rode back of his right hip to touch the gun's butt and reassure himself it was still there. It could have been a lot of things. Spotlighters doing some illegal hunting, drunks blasting at beer bottles, maybe even a couple of campers attacked in their tent by a bear and cutting loose at it. But knowing there were U.S. Marshals serving an arrest warrant on a man suspected of involvement in multiple deaths, Howard had to consider that maybe something had gone wrong with the operation. And what would campers or hunters be doing inside the fence? The entrance gate was ahead of him. But he spun the wheel in the car into a 180 and headed back the way he had come. When guns go off, that's where you find the action. Because it was so dark and he was moving and watching the fence to his left, and because the black SUV was parked off to the right in the trees, he almost missed it. He kept going, considering his options. The SUV could have been parked there empty for days, for all he knew. Maybe it belonged to those hypothetical campers shooting at the equally hypothetical bear. He could keep going and do nothing. He could keep going, use his Virgil, and call for help. Of course, he was hours by road or even air from any law to speak of, and that was too long. No, it was against SOP, but he had no choice. What he was going to do was keep going until he was around a curve or far enough away so anybody who might be in the SUV would then he would pull over and backtrack on foot. Ventura glanced at his watch. Just past 0200. The kidnap team still hadn't spotted him. He frowned. He called the surveillance team.
Where is my black man?
Still heading toward the gate. Should be there soon.
They'd be long gone by the time anybody came through the front gate and got here.
All right, let me know when.
He cut it off as he spotted the threat. One of the kidnappers had left his vehicle and circled around one of the trailers. Ventura could hear the man because Ventura was wearing bat ears, tiny electronic plugs that functioned both as a hearing aid for normal sounds and suppressors for sudden loud noises. Ventura pulled the flash grenade from his pocket, pressed the timer button, and closed his eyes against the bright flash he knew was coming. He opened his eyes at the same time he heard the kidnapper's startled yell. Ventura drew his pistol and goosed the little scooter. The kidnapper fired three shots. Ventura indexed the flashes and shot back two rounds. He heard the man scream and heard him hit the ground. One down. He circled the scooter away and back toward the fence. He did a tactical reload. Something bothered him. Something was wrong. Why had the kidnapper shot at them? How could he take the risk of hitting Morrison? Could the Chinese have hired somebody that foolish? It was one more inconsistency that didn't add up. But he'd have to work it out later. There were still three of them running around. The fence was through that patch of woods just ahead. They could play Q&A later, one step at a time. Be in the moment. It had been a long time since Howard had done any real hunting. His advantage was that if he couldn't see them, they probably couldn't see him. He inched his way forward in the old knees and elbow locomotion until he was only a couple of meters behind the black SUV, a Ford Explorer. He inched closer until he was right at the back bumper. A man's voice said, "I gotta piss. We're supposed to stay in the car until we see the signal." "Fuck the signal. I can see it just as well taking a leak as I can from in here." The passenger door opened and the guy was walking around to the back of the truck. Howard pushed himself under the Explorer. Three heartbeats later, the sound of a stream of urine splashing came loud in the night. Howard could even hear the man's pant zipper going back up when he was done. The peeing man was halfway back to the car door when the driver said, "There it is. Come on, get in." From his vantage point under the vehicle, Howard couldn't see much, but he was able to catch a glimmer of light from across the road. That would be the signal. Who was giving the signal and what exactly it meant? Well, that wasn't altogether clear, but the gist of it was fairly evident to Howard. Somebody was on the other side of the fence that surrounded Harp, and these two were there to meet whoever it was. His money was on that somebody being Morrison. Otherwise, it was going to be one hell of a coincidence. The Ford's engine cranked, and that was incredibly loud from where Howard lay, his head directly under it. If the guy swung any kind of sharp turn when he pulled out, he'd feel a big bump at the same time John Howard felt the back wheel crush him. He took a deep breath. The driver pulled straight out and across the road before he wheeled the big SUV into a tight right turn broadside to Howard. The peeing man jumped out and ran around the car toward the fence. Howard could see him in the red glow of the brake lights. He was carrying what looked like a big pair of hedge clippers, and it took a second for Howard to realize that the tool was actually a pair of bolt cutters. Howard came up, pulled his revolver, and started across the narrow road toward the Explorer, crouching low as he moved. The plinks of the cutters snipping the chain link sounded crisp in the night. Howard had almost made it to the Ford's passenger door when the driver looked up and saw him. "Incoming!" the driver screamed. "Incoming!" Howard zigged to his left, toward the car's rear, just as a gunshot exploded inside the Explorer. The passenger window shattered and the bullet passed close enough so he heard it whistle by. Bad guys, no goddamn doubt about it. Howard rounded the back of the Explorer, dropped prone, and looked for a target. "Move the car," somebody said. They didn't sound the least bit excited. The driver stepped on the gas. The smell of burned tire filled the air as the Explorer screeched and lurched forward. Howard then lined the revolver up on the movement and squeezed the trigger. Somebody screamed and somebody returned fire. The dragon's tongue muzzle blast lit the scene just enough for Howard to see there were two men standing next to a hole clipped through the fence, a third man lying on the ground. A bullet spanged off the road where he had been, and the ricochet whined off into the trees. Howard scraped his elbows on the road as he swung the revolver sideways and pointed at where he'd seen the flash. "Move," a man said, insistent but not panicky. "Whoever he is, he's a lot calmer than I am."
The scream of brakes forced Howard to glance away from his target zone just as he cranked off two more shots. He rolled again and saw the Explorer's headlights flash on as the SUV did a rubber-burning 180. The driver was going to put some light on the subject, and that was bad. An answering pair of shots spewed more orange, and two more bullets hit the road inches away. Howard leaped up. He had to get off the road before... too late. The SUV's headlights found him. He dived for the side of the road and ran for the trees. More gunshots reached for him, but missed. The roar of the SUV's engine increased as it headed back in his direction. The driver angled the vehicle, trying to find him with the light. Howard slipped on something, fell and rolled, ending up on his back, feet facing the oncoming Explorer. He got a nice, clear sight picture outlined against the oncoming headlights. He aimed at the windshield on the driver's side. The SUV was 50 meters away and closing. He pulled the trigger. 1, 2, 3, 4. The gun stopped shooting after 3 times, clicked empty, but the SUV slewed off the road and angled into the fence, bowing a big section before it took out a post and stopped. His piece was empty. He scrabbled up and into the trees, dropped to the ground, thumbed the cylinder latch, shoved the cylinder out with his left hand, hammered the extractor rod with the palm. Empty shells flew. He grabbed a speed strip and started to reload. 1, 2, 3. The SUV's motor raced, and there came the sound of metal tearing. The motor roared louder. The tire screamed. He must have missed the driver. Either that or the other two had gotten to the SUV. Load, load. Come on, come on. 4, 5, 6. He snapped the cylinder closed and crawled toward the road. As he reached the edge of the trees, the Explorer roared past, accelerating away. Fuck that, Howard yelled. He scrambled up, ran into the road, and whipped his gun up in both hands. The SUV was really moving. It was 80, 90 meters away as he cooked off all 6 as fast as he could, closing his eyes to avoid the muzzle flashes. Again, the SUV squealed into a 180 turn, and the lights came round to find Howard. But the car didn't start back. It just sat there. 90 meters, okay. Okay, he had time to reload again. The SUV's door slammed shut. Somebody got out? Howard ejected the empties, reached for another speed loader. Plenty of time. He saw the muzzle flash, felt the kick in his belly from a heavy boot as he went down, then heard the boom from the weapon. Fuck! He was shot, and his gun was empty. His side burned over his right hip. Get up, John. Get up now! He half-crawled, half-rolled off the road and back to the woods. In the trees, he kept moving, his fist jammed over the bullet wound. He got as far as he could before his legs just quit working. He sat, fumbled for his Virgil, managed to trigger the distress signal as he felt himself graying out. His last thoughts as he lost consciousness were of disbelief. How could somebody have hit a target at 90 meters like that? With a handgun and only the headlights of a car in the dark? Hell of a shot. Gakona, Alaska. What the hell happened? Morrison said again and again. What the hell happened? The cool night air whistled through the car through 3 holes in the windshield. Morrison in the back was probably in shock, but at that, he was a lot better off than Ventura's 2 men who were both dead. The black man had done it. He was probably dead or dying himself by now. Ventura had put one solidly into him. The client was alive, and they would rendezvous with more of Ventura's team in a couple of minutes. What the hell happened? Relax. It's okay now. They tried, but they failed. We'll regroup and wait for them to contact us.
Are you crazy?
Listen, you can't take this personally. It's just business. They tried, they missed. So now they'll deal. Nothing has changed. Tuesday, June 14th, Quantico, Virginia.
Sir?
Michaels came out of a shallow sleep. He was in his office on the couch.
What?
One of the night crew? Askins? Haskins. Stood in the doorway. Michaels sat up.
Yes. We got a distress signal from General Howard's Virgil from Alaska.
Federal marshals found him. He's been shot. An Alaska National Guard copter is on the way. He's up near Gakona. He looked at his watch. It was 6 a.m. He needed to wash his face and to find Tony. What had John gotten into? But before he could reach the door, his own comm chirped its top priority tone. He hurried to the receiver and picked it up.
John.
No, it's Melissa Allison.
The director. What was she doing up at this hour?
She didn't give him time to wonder. I just got a call from Adam Brickman in the U.S. Marshal's office. One of his men was wounded in a shootout in Nowhere, Alaska, attempting to serve an arrest warrant authorized by your office. So was General John Howard. They are alive, just barely, on their way to a hospital in Anchorage. But Brickman isn't happy. I'm not happy either, Commander, because when he started chewing me out for not warning his people this was a shoot-sit, I didn't know what the hell he was talking about.
Uh-oh.
I'm sorry, Madam Director. I didn't realize there was any danger.
You sent marshals and the head of Net Force's military arm to pick up somebody, which is outside your charter unless there are special circumstances. I'm going to be in my office in 40 minutes. I suggest you be there when I arrive.
Yes, ma'am.
He cradled the receiver. Great. Just great. He had a federal marshal and John Howard shot up and the director of the FBI ready to tear him a new asshole. Great way to start the day, wasn't it? Maybe if he was lucky, a big meteor would fall on him.
Alex?
Tony.
Hey.
What's up?
Walk with me. I'll fill you in.
In the air over British Columbia. Because Ventura wanted to have a few words with the Chinese, he had Morrison's phone when it rang.
Dr. Morrison?
No, Ventura.
Ah, Luther. How are you?
Why, I'm just fine, Chili, though I can't say the same for your people. I expected better.
There was a moment's hesitation, then Wu said, Much as I'd like to turn this to my advantage, I have to confess, I don't know what you are talking about, Luther.
Come on. We're professionals here. I don't hold it against you. I realize it was just business.
Nope. Sorry. I'm not tracking.
Ventura considered it. There was no real reason for Wu to be coy.
So you didn't send people to, have an informal chat with my client?
No.
Ventura heard the not yet in that single word, but he also had to stop and think real hard about the implications. If Wu hadn't sent a team, then who were those men? Had he just shot a couple of real federal marshals?
Dr. Morrison is okay, isn't he? Wu asked. We were quite impressed with the test. We are ready to get down to brass tacks.
He's fine. Here he is.
Ventura waved at Morrison. He held his thumb over the transmitter mic.
Wu, he's ready to deal, and don't get bent with him. He didn't send his people after you. Those were legitimate feds.
Morrison's eyes went wide. It couldn't be.
You screwed up, Doctor. They figured it out somehow, and now we have a whole new set of problems.
Madam Director Allison was royally pissed. In her shoes, Michaels might have felt the same way.
And you felt you couldn't pass this along to me. I had to find out from some other agency?
He sat in the chair in front of her desk and nodded.
I didn't see the need. Four federal marshals went to pick up one desk jockey scientist. I met the man. He could hardly stand up without losing his balance. He had no history of violence. I asked John to go along to keep us in the loop. It was a milk run.
According to the guards at this Harp place, Morrison wasn't alone. He was accompanied by a Dr. Dick Grayson. His identity turns out to be bogus.
Despite the situation, Michael smiled.
Something funny about that I'm missing, Commander?
Dick Grayson is the secret identity of Batman's sidekick, Robin.
Yes, well, Robin is likely the man who plugged the marshal along with John Howard on his way out of town. The rest of the arrest team managed to gather themselves enough to pick up the trail. Morrison and his gun-toting friend took a small cart through the woods, cut a hole in the fence, and were presumably picked up by accomplices. The marshals found an armed dead man next to the hole in the fence, shot in the heart. No ID on the man. There were signs that a car had left the road and plowed into the fence 50 yards away. A shot-up Ford Explorer was found at an old airstrip. There was another dead man in the front seat. No identification on him either. Probably Howard's work.
Huh, Michael said. Oh, you can do better than that, Commander. You are supposed to be playing with computers. You are supposed to be finding and busting pirate ships in the Gulf, peddling Viagra and steroids and diet pills over the Internet without prescriptions, or hunting down teenaged hackers who post porno in church webpages. You went outside your authority, and I don't know what it is you stepped into. But whatever it is on your shoes, and it is your responsibility now. I want to know just what the hell is going on. His Virgil bleated the opening notes from the old rock and roll song, Bad to the Bone. The director frowned. Sorry, he said. He reached for the Virgil to shut it off, but saw Jay's face on the tiny screen. Gridley wouldn't have bothered him if it wasn't important.
Jay?
Looks like John Howard is going to make it, boss.
Thank God. Michaels discommed, then looked at the director. Howard is going to pull through.
That's good news, at least. Why don't you see if you can't add to it?
Anchorage, Alaska. When John Howard awoke, the first face he saw belonged to Sergeant Julio Fernandez. With consciousness came the awareness that he was in a bed, in a hospital room, and that his right side and belly hurt like hell. He also had a headache. His mouth was dry, and his arm had an IV tube running into it.
He's awake, Fernandez said.
How bad?
Howard asked.
John.
That was Nadine. He turned his head slightly.
Hey, babe. Julio?
You're shy a loop of small intestine, but you won't have to poop into a bag for the rest of your life or anything.
Howard nodded.
Thanks.
Nadine was there then, and there were tears and hugging. Man, he was glad to see her.
Dad?
Hey, son, where's your little friend?
She's in the waiting room. I'll go tell her you're okay. They wouldn't let anybody but family in.
Howard looked at Fernandez. He shrugged.
I told them I was your brother.
They decided it wasn't worth arguing about.
How long have I been out?
Been about 6 hours since you got here.
Where is here?
Anchorage. That's in Alaska.
Thank you for that information, Sergeant.
How did you get here so fast?
I had a friend in the Air Force who owed me a big favor.
You haven't lived until you've done a supersonic barrel roll. Yee-haw.
Nadine said,
Are you okay, John?
I felt better, but... Yeah, I'm okay.
Good. I have to go to the bathroom.
Stay right here.
Howard looked at Fernandez again.
You want to tell me about it? Why don't you go first? I'll fill in what we know that you don't.
Howard nodded. He laid it out, the whole thing. When he was done, Fernandez nodded in return.
90 yards, huh? Hell of a shot.
Well, you actually did better than he did. The marshals had one wounded, but they collected 2 corpses. One by the fence, one in the SUV.
One in the car was in the passenger seat when they found him, but holes in the windshield and spatter pattern says he got it while driving. How many rounds did you fire at the driver?
3.
All in the glass, 4-inch group, and they counted 5 holes in the back.
I shot 6.
You missed one.
You need more practice.
5 out of 6 at 90 yards in the dark? Car going away? I don't think so. I do think I'm going to keep that Medusa, he said. I feel a certain bond with it.
Quantico, Virginia. Tony stood outside HQ and stared into the cloudy blue sky.
Going to rain, she guessed. Yeah, and maybe if you're real lucky, lightning will strike you. She sighed. She had just come from her meeting with Director Allison, and the good news was that she had been offered a job. The bad news was that she had been offered a job. And what a job. A newly created position, special assistant to the director and liaison to NetForce. She would be working with Alex, but not for him. and she would be responsible for conveying the wishes of the director to NetForce in such a way to make certain that the interface between the Bureau and NetForce would be more cleanly meshed. Translation, she would be looking over Alex's shoulder, making sure he didn't screw up. She didn't have to take it, of course. She could walk away, except that it was the perfect job. She'd be in fairly close contact with Alex. She could cover him if he did stub his toe now and then, and she'd still be working for the government, with a grade and pay raise to boot. Essentially, she would be Alex's equal at work. The thing was, how was she going to tell him? He might not see it for what it was, and knowing Alex, he might feel, well, upset. She didn't want to upset him. Then again, it wouldn't really hurt him, and in the long run, it could be better for their relationship. She didn't have to take the job. She told the director she'd have to think it over, that she'd get back to her. But she had made up her mind. Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. Morrison never thought he would be glad to see the gates of a racist militia compound, but as soon as they closed behind the car, he felt a lot better. General Bull Smith was waiting at the main compound, and as soon as Ventura had alighted, he made straight for the man.
Everything go okay, Colonel?
More or less, sir. We had some problems. I don't want you to get blindsided by this, so I'll just tell you up front. We are going to get some heat because of a few things that went down.
Smith smiled. Heat doesn't bother us at all. Idaho Summers will give hell a run for the money sometimes.
Some of this could be from our own side. Morrison watched Smith take this in.
That a fact?
You'll hear about it on the news. I lost two men. A couple of federal marshals went down, too.
No shit.
I don't think they know who we are, and they can't know where we went. Smith nodded.
Well, revolution might be starting sooner than expected. Why don't you all come in and have a beer? Got barbecued pork cooking.
That sounds great. After Smith was out of earshot, Morrison asked,
What now?
We wait for our friends to get in touch with us as to the transfers on both sides of the negotiation. Since nobody trusts anybody, nor should they, certain safeguards must be put into effect. We'll have to work those out. They won't come here? Wishful thinking, Doctor. No. They'll want a place of their choosing. They'll settle for one of our choosing. But it'll have to be a lot more neutral than an armed camp. Quantico, Virginia. On the phone, Michael said,
So what's your take on it, John?
Howard didn't sound as if he had been shot and almost killed only hours ago. He said,
Morrison is our boy. No reason for him to resist the marshals otherwise, and damn sure no reason for him to have shooters on hand to resist with. If we can keep him away from HARP or any of the other transmitters like it, we can stop the attacks.
Why would he do this? Drive people to a killing madness?
I don't know. Maybe he's crazy himself.
Michael sighed. The man hadn't seemed crazy when he'd been sitting right here in this office. So far, Jay hadn't been able to find anything else that directly connected Morrison to the events in China or Portland. Hell, if he hadn't come in, NetForce wouldn't have had a clue about any of this.
Any leads on where he went? Howard asked.
Not yet.
I'm going to be out of here in a day or two. I'll get to the office.
You will go home, General. We will run this guy down doing the things we know how to do. What we haven't done enough of lately. Computer detection. They said their goodbyes. Michael's headed to Jay's office. I trust you are well on the way to catching the man responsible for shooting our teammate.
Jay smiled. We've got all his personal records. He took out a second mortgage on his house and cleaned out his bank account, so he has a big chunk of cash. He could have bought a cheap car, rented a private plane, maybe even gotten himself some phony ID for whatever. We have a description of the guy who was with Morrison from the guards at HARP, but your average-looking science geek isn't a lot of help. No surveillance cameras managed to catch an image of Dick Grayson, and it was old Dick who must have done the shooting. Hey, you know who Dick Grayson is?
Robin, the boy wonder.
Jay looked disappointed, but he continued, FBI field agents have questioned Morrison's wife, and she wouldn't know harp from a harpoon.
What else?
Nothing else. We have a respected scientist who apparently figured out how to drive people crazy using a giant walkie-talkie, then up and did it. We know when, and we think we sort of know generally how, but not why.
Conjecture.
I don't know, boss. Doesn't make any sense to me.
Anybody ever screw him over so bad he'd want this kind of revenge?
Not that I've seen. He lost his funding on a research project, but got a higher-paying job right after.
Power?
Never had any ambition.
Never had an ambition to run things, far as I can tell.
Money, then. How does zapping a couple of Chinese villages and then downtown Portland get him rich?
No, it didn't make a lot of sense.
Michaels had a sudden thought.
Suppose you wanted to buy a new computer system, something experimental?
Yeah.
How would you go about buying it if you weren't sure what it would do?
Sit down, crank it up to high and let it fly, find out what it would do.
Ah. Yeah, Michael said. Maybe that's what Morrison was doing. Maybe he was showing it to a potential customer. How much you figure such a thing might be worth to the right customer, the power to drive your enemies bonkers.
Damn.
Yeah. I think we just might have found ourselves an even uglier can of worms. As long as it is Morrison, we get him eventually. But what if he passes it along to somebody else?
That could be a problem.
It already is a problem. Ours. As of now, this is your reason for living. Hit the net, get all the help you can get. Find this guy, Jay, and find him fast.
Yeah.
Michaels looked around. You seen Tony? I kind of lost track of her around lunchtime.
No, I haven't seen her.
He looked back at his computer. I'm hoping to get her to come back to work.
Really? That's, good, boss.
What? Michael said.
What?
What? Jay responded, still not looking up. You aren't telling me something I need to hear.
Boss,
I have a lot on my mind right now, Jay. How about you don't add worrying about the unknown to it?
Jay blew out a sigh. All right. Last time I was in the feed mainframe, I left myself a door in the director's office subsystem.
And you found something I need to know, but that you don't want to tell me. What? Am I going to get fired?
No, no, nothing like that. It's just that, well, Tony had a meeting with the director today, at 1.
And now you can drop the other shoe.
You really ought to hear it from her, boss.
Maybe so, but I'm going to hear it from you.
Jay shook his head. The director just put in the e-forms for a new staff job in her office. Special assistant. She was offering the job to Tony.
Michaels blinked. And she took the job?
Not that I can tell.
Michaels felt an absurd sense of relief. A job offer, fine, that was no big deal. Sure, she should have told him about it, but...
Hey, things were busy, and maybe she'd planned to brush the director off before she mentioned it. That would be like her. Nothing to worry about.
Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. Inside the car, it was just the two of them, Morrison in the back, Ventura driving. Over the phone, Wu's voice was silky, relaxed.
Of course we trust you. It's just that some of your associates seem to have a bias against people of our persuasion. No point in tempting fate now, is there?
Morrison nodded at the unseen speaker.
Perhaps the Chinese embassy might be more to your liking.
Wu had the grace to laugh.
Somehow I don't think Luther would feel very comfortable under such circumstances.
Let's cut to the chase, Morrison said. I'll name a place and we'll meet there.
Perhaps. Where?
There's a theater in Woodland Hills, California. That's just outside Los Angeles.
I know where Woodland Hills is, Doctor.
Morrison continued. The theater is fairly new, an IMAX. It's on the edge of a big shopping center.
Ah, yes, on Mulholland, Wu broke in.
I saw the latest James Bond picture there a few months ago. You take the Ventura Freeway.
Good. That'll save me having to give directions. Tomorrow at noon.
I have a secure account in an island bank. Bring a laptop with a secure wireless modem.
How do we know you will deliver?
I'll be sitting right there next to you. You transfer the money, I transfer the information. I assume you will have scientists standing by who can verify the information.
Can they verify it immediately?
If they have a test subject and access to ECG equipment and a couple of basic transmitters, they can be ready to run the experiment as soon as they get the code sequence. They'll be able to confirm it before the movie is over.
All right. I'll see you at noon tomorrow. Have a pleasant trip.
Wu disconnected, and Morrison blew out a big sigh of relief.
He went for it, Ventura said.
Yes.
Good. We're in business.
Morrison was worried. This sounds very risky to me, a public movie theater. It will be too easy for him to bring men with guns in and hide them among the audience.
Don't worry. We'll know who they are. The theater will be having a special screening tomorrow at noon for screenwriters, members of the WGA. They'll have to show a card to get in the showing. Everybody else will either be one of ours or belong to the Chinese. We'll let their people in because we will have the advantage. The employees from the booth to the concession stand to the guy who tears your ticket in half will be our people. For every one they get inside, we'll have one in a nearby seat covering them. Everybody our men don't know will be a potential target. If click comes to bang, they will know who to shoot. And if they miss, well, nobody will notice if there are a few less screenwriters anyhow. Everybody in L.A. is working on a script.
How can you do this? You know the guy who owns the place?
I am the guy who owns the place. Over the years, I've done pretty well for my retirement, Doctor. I'm not in the same class as you were about to be, but I could live fairly comfortably off the investments and interest without ever touching my principal.
Morrison shook his head. Why would a man of wealth and property risk his life to work as a bodyguard? Ventura must have read his mind.
A man likes to keep busy doing work he enjoys.
Morrison looked away from Ventura. This was getting stranger and more frightening all the time. Washington, D.C. Michael sat at his kitchen table holding a cup of coffee. It was just about dawn and Tony was still asleep. He drank and stared at the wall, focusing on nothing 1,000 miles away. And how is your life, Mr. Michaels?
Why, just fine, thank you very much.
My ex-wife is getting remarried to some Idaho dork and taking my child away from me.
Unless I want to get into an ugly child custody case that will probably scar my daughter for life, something she doesn't deserve and I won't do. I personally spoke to the man who almost certainly killed scores of Chinese by using some kind of radio beam to drive them crazy, and if I had been on the fucking ball, I would have stopped him before he did it again to scores of Americans. He walked into my office, and I smiled and let him walk out. The head of my military arm was shot and seriously wounded because I wanted him to go along and keep the federal marshals company, and the guy I sent them all after plugged a marshal while he was at it, got away, and is still on the loose. My boss is ready to nail my ass to the nearest wall for not keeping her in the loop. What else? Oh, right. My woman is back and sleeping in my bed, but she's considering taking a job where she'll be looking over my shoulder at my work and telling my boss about it, and she didn't think it was worth mentioning. He had come home late. Tony had already been asleep, and he'd stewed about this particular problem until he conked out, and he woke up thinking about it.
That it?
Yeah. I think that just about covers it. My life is just swell.
He sipped at the coffee. It was cold. He considered getting up to warm it, but it wasn't worth the effort. Sitting and staring at the wall was ever so much more important. Michaels looked up. Tony stood there wearing one of his dress shirts and nothing else, and she looked absolutely gorgeous. That didn't help that she was beautiful and he loved her. He'd thought things were okay when she came back. He'd thought all was right with the world.
Well, think again, pal.
She took a mug from the dishwasher and poured coffee into it. She turned and leaned against the counter.
You want to talk about it?
Not really.
Okay.
Fine. Fine. If she wasn't going to bring it up, he would rot in hell for all eternity before he brought it up.
She blew out a sigh, then put the coffee mug down on the counter and crossed her arms.
All right. What's eating you? You're so pissed off you're about to spit. Did I do something wrong?
Wrong? No, you didn't do anything wrong.
So why are you taking my head off?
He was not going to say it. No reason. I was just wondering, since you were always hammering at me for keeping to myself, not telling you what is going on inside my head, I was just wondering why you didn't tell me you were considering going to work for Melissa Allison, that's all. Well, so much for his burn-in-hell resolve not to mention it. She unfolded her arms. I'm sorry. I was going to tell you. When? When I saw them painting your name on your new parking space?
Alex.
No, you don't have to explain. You want to work for the folks on the other side of the compound. Hey, it's not my business. You are going to take the job, right? Her arms came back up and she crossed them tightly in front of her breasts.
Yes, I am.
His gut twisted. Well, there you go. He stood. Congratulations. I'm so glad we had a chance to discuss it before you made your decision. He stalked past her toward the bedroom.
Don't do this, Alex. Don't shut down on me.
You have no room to say that right now. No room at all. I'm going to work.
If you do, I won't be here when you get back.
Fine. You're going to do what you want anyhow. Why bother to tell me? Wednesday, June 15th, Washington, D.C. In the cab on the way to the rental car place, Tony fumed. Why did Alex have to be such a horse's ass? All right, yes. She should have told him about the job interview and that she was seriously considering taking the offer. But really, when did she have the chance? After she had seen the director, Alex had been out of his office and busy. He hadn't come back to his condo until late and she'd been in bed.
Uh-huh. You can make the case that way to him if you want, but let's not bullshit ourselves, okay?
You could have mentioned it before you went to the meeting and you were only pretending to be asleep when Alex got home because you didn't want to talk about it.
All right, yes. Yes, it was true, but even so, he still didn't have any right to blow up like that.
No, but he's the man you love. And he was right about one thing. You did to him what you absolutely hate to see him do to you. You kept him in the dark about what was going on inside your head.
Tony sighed. She hated these arguments with her inner self. She always lost.
All right. So now the question was, should she wait and hash this out with Alex? Or should she go to Quantico, see the director, and tell her she was going to take the job? Her ego said the hell with him. But her heart said she should at least sit down and explain to him why she wanted to do it.
Here we are, lady, the cabbie said.
Tony blinked. The trip had been a blur. Thanks. Her mind was set. She would get the rental car, drive to the office, and find a time to talk to Alex. She could make him understand. She knew she could.